Okay, so good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center's Pinwheel Education Series on navigating the health system, mental health system from the family perspective. The Pinwheel Education Series is a monthly forum that brings together experts and persons with lived experience to talk about mental health and mental wellness. Everything related to the Pinwheel series, including a recording of today's session, can be found on our website at www.keltymentalhealth.ca/pinwheel. Now, for those of you that are joining us for the first time, the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center is a provincial mental health and substance use information and resource center serving BC children, youth, and families. We also offer peer support to families and youth, as well as to people of all ages struggling with eating disorders. You can visit our website for more information, resources, and for our contact information. So I think we will just go ahead and jump right in. So our first speaker today is Dr. Connie Coniglio. She's the Provincial Executive Director of Children's and Women's Mental Health and Substance Use Programs at BC Mental Health and Substance Use Services. Connie's portfolio includes the Provincial Specialized Eating Disorders Program for Children and Adolescents, the Mental Health Metabolic Program, and the Provincial Youth Concurrent Disorders Program. Connie is also responsible for the direction and management of mental health literacy initiatives under the BC Mental Health and Substance Use Services provincial mandate. So welcome, Connie,
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you for inviting me today. This is actually the first time I've participated in the Pinwheel series, although I have been involved in organizing and managing this part of this program for many, many years. Actually, Pinwheel's been going on for, I think, 5 or 6 years now, the monthly telephone call-in and telehealth. So it's great to be here and have a chance to talk with you about system navigation from a family perspective. And what I'm going to do is just get us started by setting the stage a little bit, talking a little bit about incidents of child and youth mental health in British Columbia, and then talking a bit about the system in general, and especially from the perspective of the BC Children's Hospital, telling you a little bit about what we do here and what our role is in the system of care. And then I'm going to hand it off to my colleagues who know a lot about system navigation, both from a professional perspective and a family perspective. So you're going to hear a lot of really interesting things. And then we'll, of course, have an opportunity for questions and discussion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So so I'll start off just with a little bit of data about incidence of child and youth mental health in British Columbia. And we're really lucky in BC because we have some researchers who do some great work in telling us about the incidence of child and youth mental health and substance use issues in our province. And Charlotte Waddell, she's attached to the Ministry for Children and Family Development, and she is the lead on some of that research. So we have good data from 2014 that tells us that 12.6% of youth in British Columbia are struggling with mental health conditions. And that's about 84,000 children and youth in the province. And that's children and youth who experience mental disorders that cause significant distress and impairment to their functioning at home, school, or in the community. So those are generally kids in families where a mental health condition is impacting them in a big way, a significant way, and interfering with daily living. So lots of people struggle with mental health and substance use concerns, but this 84,000 or 12% are the ones who are really struggling the most, let's say. And the Mental Health Commission of Canada also has some really good data, and they suggest that between 14 and 25% of children and youth have significant mental health concerns. So that's a big number. It's obviously something that impacts people's lives tremendously, and system navigation is critical to families in terms of getting the help they need in a timely way when they have a mental health concern. So that's kind of the premise I'm starting with, is that it's a significant issue. It impacts a lot of families in British Columbia, and we need to improve system navigation, and that's a lot of what we want to talk with you about today. Just a little bit more about the types of disorders that children and youth experience, and along with the prevalence piece or the incidence. We call mental health concerns that occur more frequently in the population high prevalence. And high prevalence mental health conditions include anxiety and ADHD, attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder, conduct disorder, and depression. So those are the most commonly occurring mental health conditions in children and youth. And anxiety being the very most common, and especially really common in school environments where often it's first identified by children and their families. And low prevalence, or things that occur least frequently, are autism, bipolar illness, eating disorders, and schizophrenia. But keep in mind, when we talk about low prevalence, there still can be high interference with living, particularly when you think about something like eating disorders, which is a very low prevalence mental health condition. It also has very high morbidity and mortality. And when you think about psychosis or schizophrenia, same thing, very high impact on people's lives. So even though some of these mental health conditions occur less frequently, they still have a big impact on how people live and their functioning and how they transition into adulthood. So another thing just about prevalence is ADHD and anxiety and OCD are generally mental health conditions that start earlier in life, that often you see them in younger kids, like even as young as 2 and 3 and 4 and 5. And other mental health conditions really start later, like substance use, anorexia and bulimia being eating disorders, depression, schizophrenia, psychosis. Those are generally things that happen later or emerge later in the life of a youth. So more around puberty. And most mental disorders emerge during childhood or adolescence. I think that's really, really important for our discussion, because largely, most of the time, these things are happening in childhood, 75% of the time, and 75% of lifetime cases begin before the age of 24. Again, emphasizing how important it is to do interventions early, to understand what's happening for kids early, and to identify kids early to get help. And mental health concerns or mental disorders are actually the most common health issue in children and youth, more than any other health issue impacting our lives. So getting on to the piece about system navigation, which is why we're all here to talk today, less than half of the youth in BC who need help actually access the help that they need. And that's pretty concerning to us at the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center, and concerning to everyone who has a child who may be impacted by mental health concerns. And we know that stigma is a really serious barrier to help seeking. And stigma is something that a lot of people are starting to talk about now more, about the importance of understanding how stigma can prevent people from getting help. It can prevent kids from getting help in a timely way, and from families from seeking help. So stigma is a big issue that we're trying to work on. As far as the system of care is concerned, we know it's a complex system. But I wanted to try and quickly explain at a very, very high level what the system looks like. And then I think Meredith and Julie are going to unpackage that a lot more. But most of the time, and the statistics bear this out, children, youth, and families go to their doctors, their family doctors or family physicians, GPs, or even walk-in clinics when they have mental health concerns. That's the place where people generally go. And that speaks to how important it is that physicians are educated about mental health issues and mental health concerns. And some of the work we do in mental health literacy is educating doctors about mental health conditions so they recognize things sooner and they actually know where to send people for help. So that's where people mostly go. That's primary care. Also, schools are a place where kids are identified and get help. And there's a lot of work being done in schools now to identify kids early, do prevention and early intervention work, and then also link kids to resources. But schools are an important place for getting help and help seeking. And then there are community-based child and youth mental health teams located all across the province of British Columbia. And they're run through Ministry for Children and Family Development. And that's really generally the first step beyond a physician or a school or places where people have early identification to actually get help in terms of therapies and interventions. And those child and youth mental health teams are located in communities everywhere in British Columbia. And we can tell you a little bit later about, you know, like how do you find the information out about where to find those teams and how do you access those teams. But they exist all around the province, and that's a really good place to start. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention is in hospitals all around British Columbia, there are emergency rooms where families go and kids go when they have an urgent or an emergency concern related to mental health and substance use. And health regions also have some inpatient services for youth, particularly, who may need longer interventions that are in the community. So, for instance, if you're in Kelowna, there's an adolescent psychiatry unit where youth often go. And there are other places like that around the province where there's help. Fraser Health Authority has a specialized unit now for kids and youth. So those services are in health authorities. And then there's the services here at BC Children's, which are very specialized services. So we're actually kind of not the first step for people. We're generally farther down the line when people are referred to us for very specialized care, when they've already been seen perhaps by a team in the community, a child and youth mental health team, a physician, a pediatrician, and then they're referred to BC Children's from other levels of care, like doctors and counselors and things. And we do a number of things that are specialized. We have outpatient services that are specialized. We have inpatient units that are highly specialized. And we have a children's adolescent psychiatric emergency program where youth can come into the hospital when they need to for a few days because of an emergent or urgent situation. But generally speaking, all those referrals come from the community unless the child comes through the emergency department at BC Children's Hospital. So just a bit before I hand it over, I mean, the barriers and challenges are there, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. I did talk about stigma. And stigma is associated with people not seeking help. And we know that youth especially are more likely not to seek help because of their fears and their concerns and stigma. And that's something we're concerned about and doing work with. There are some challenges with access and availability of resources. And geography plays a part in that. Depending on where you live in the province, there can be better access or worse. Location, like where you live and where the services are located, can impact it. And wait times. There are wait times that cause difficulties with access. We're trying to improve understanding of mental health issues by doing these pinwheel sessions and by talking to people about mental health and doing mental health literacy work, and we think that that's going to improve access too. And system navigation is really critical, along with mental health literacy, peer support, and education. And I talked about doctors and others who may be able to help more if they know more about mental health concerns and conditions and are able to intervene sooner and provide help. So there's lots of strategies. I'm going to hand it over to my colleagues now to talk a little bit more about the system and about navigation and about strategies in more detail. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Connie. So we're going to move right along to our next speaker. So Meredith DeFritas is our next speaker. She's a project manager with the health literacy team here at BC Mental Health and Substance Use Services. And Meredith develops and manages many health literacy projects and initiatives, including cross-cultural initiatives, healthy living initiatives, and she also manages the BC Partners for Mental Health and Addictions Information, as well as the BC Mental Health and Substance Use Provincial Health Literacy Network. That is a mouthful. Meredith completed her master's in public health at Simon Fraser University and also holds a Bachelor of Arts with honors in medical anthropology from McGill University. So welcome, Meredith.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
So thank you, Azada, for the invitation. I'm happy to be here today to talk about a new resource that we've developed, BC Mental Health and Substance Use Services. But before I talk about the resource, I want to build on what Connie said and just talk a little bit more about our health literacy team and the portfolio that we have and the work that we're doing in the province. So our small but robust team supports mental health literacy among children, youth, and families in the province through the development of a wide range of different projects and initiatives. And these projects focus on a variety of different areas, from the promotion of mental well-being and mental health promotion to projects looking at supporting early identification of mental health challenges, as well as resources to help support families and children and youth who are experiencing mental health challenges in the province. So these projects, we develop them in a wide range of different formats and promote them through different channels. So different formats include videos, toolkits, websites. We've started developing some different apps. We also hold different events and webinars, such as the Pinwheel Series, and basically try and make sure that the resources we develop are accessible in a wide variety of formats, because we really have a provincial mandate and we're trying to reach families across the province. So the aim is really to start to try and address some of those barriers that families encounter when trying to access information and resources on mental health for their children and youth, to reduce the stigma around mental health and substance use, as Connie mentioned, and really to support the mental health and information and resource needs of families in the province. So in terms of our health literacy portfolio, there's a few different main areas that we focus on in terms of kind of themes, so I just want to touch on those. We do healthy living initiatives, we oversee some school-based mental health initiatives, working with province or schools within the province and educators. We have several youth and young adult initiatives, as well as healthy weights and eating disorders work, and then our cross-cultural mental health literacy initiatives, among some others. And all of the work we do within the team is closely linked with the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center. So resources developed are primarily promoted and accessible through the Kelty Center and the Kelty Mental Health website. So it's a closely aligned relationship there. But today I'm going to be talking about one resource in particular, which is our new system navigation video. And this was developed really for those families who are concerned about their child or youth's mental health and really aren't sure where to go as a first step to get some help. So this resource was developed as part of our cross-cultural mental health literacy portfolio. And this means that we kept in mind some additional barriers or challenges that families from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds might be experiencing when they're looking for information or support for their child. So that was kind of the lens that we brought to the project, and we tried to address some of those additional concerns within the video. So the concept for the project was really developed through consultations we've done with a number of different individuals and organizations in the province. So this included families from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds, community-based organizations that work with families in the province, including newcomer and immigrant families, needs that had been identified through the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center in terms of what people were looking for and what questions they were having when they were contacting the Kelty Center, as well as health professionals as well in the province. So what we were hearing was that there was a lot of questions about where to start, where to go, and just really having kind of an overwhelming sense of the system's really large and I don't know where to go. For families that were new to BC, there was also a lot of concerns about privacy and confidentiality. If I'm sharing this information, who else knows about it? Is it going to affect my immigration status? Is my child going to be taken away from me? Just a lot of concerns and unknowns about the system. Because the system is so large, there are questions around the different pathways of entry, where's the best place to start, what do different health professionals do, what is the difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist, which services would a family have to pay for, which services are covered by the government, and then what, when you did see someone, what sort of questions would you be asked, what was the expectation of you as a family in terms of what you would be sharing? And if you didn't speak English, how did you go about accessing services? Were there interpreters available? When would those be available? Was there a cost associated? So we were hearing a lot of questions about the system and where to get started, and we identified there was a need really to start at that first place when a family was looking for help and just needed some kind of very basic information about some of those first steps. So that's what informed this new resource that we developed. It's a video resource, which is called Supporting Children and Youth with Mental Health Challenges. And it's divided into two parts. Part one is really where can families begin? And it overviews the health system in BC and narrows down the first four contacts that families can make if they're concerned about their child's mental health. So the contacts that Connie had mentioned previously. So in the video, each of these contacts is described in terms of their role and how they can provide support to families, what costs are associated, if any, and then how families can go about accessing them in terms of making that first connection. The second part of the video is what can families expect along the way. So this covers those additional questions in terms of that first meeting with a health professional, in terms of what's expected from the family and kind of what questions they might be asked. The video also goes into how families can prepare for that first meeting in terms of preparing their child and themselves, questions they might want to bring with them to that meeting, how interpreters can be arranged if that's something that's needed, as well as that confidentiality piece. So we kind of discuss in the videos around that challenge and the frustration that some families can face sometimes, and that's where we link people back and say, you know, these are the first places to get started, but if you are experiencing challenges, questions come up, we point people to the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center as a place to get additional support for system navigation, as well as a place where they can access peer support with parents and youth that have been there before. So when these videos were being developed, we did include kind of additional consultations with families that have previously gone through the system with their child or youth, as well as health professionals, to make sure we were including kind of that key core information that families would want to know at the beginning. And in order to make the videos as accessible as possible, we did a few different things. One is it's in two parts, so we really wanted to chunk the information into digestible formats. So each video part is just 3 minutes long, so that not too much information is being shared with the family at once. It's really kind of digestible. And then we have the video in an animated style with voiceover in 7 different languages. So we have English, French, Farsi, Punjabi, Korean, Cantonese, and Mandarin. And the reason why we did the voiceover is typically videos are created in English and then subtitles are added afterwards if you want to have different languages available. But because we want to make the video as accessible and understandable to families as possible, we wanted to move away from using subtitles, which can often come across the screen really quickly and information can be lost, and just stick with the voiceover, which would be eliminating some of those additional barriers. The audience for the video is primarily families, but we do have a secondary audience in terms of those other individuals and organizations that do support families, so schools, health professionals, and others. And we're hoping that these individuals can help share the video with families that they know are looking for help, and use it as a kind of first step to answer some of the questions they might be having. So the video is available on the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center's website through the home page, as well as a few different other pages, including the families page and the cross-cultural page. It's also featured on our YouTube site. So it's available in a few different places, and if individuals are interested in using the video and embedding it onto their websites or including a link through their newsletters, that's all possible through our YouTube site as well, where you can share it and embed it. So the next steps are really focusing on promoting the video to families and their secondary audiences. We're developing some promotional materials, so handouts that people can give out in like kind of like a little postcard format, as well as some posters that can be hung up. And then we're looking through our mental health literacy work to continue to build on the system navigation piece. So there'll be some new information added to the Kelty Center soon around different types of therapies, what different health professionals do, and we're working with the FORCE to update our what to expect sheets that are on the Kelty Center's website as well. So all in an effort to help families as they navigate the system. So yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Meredith. So our final speaker is Julie Collette. So Julie is a FORCE parent in residence at the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center, and Julie has the unique parent perspective of being a mother of four, a teacher, as well as having a child and now young adult with lived experience facing mental health challenges. Julie offers her expertise on navigating the mental health system both personally and professionally. She works with families to provide individualized system navigation and support. So welcome, Julie, and go ahead.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me. As mentioned, my name is Julie Collette, and I work for the FORCE Society for Kids Mental Health, which is a provincial organization that is in partnership with the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center. And the FORCE is located all over the province, so families are able to access peer support and system navigation from an individual perspective, either, again, through the Force Society website, forcesociety.com, or the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center website or phone number. And what we do is we really help from an individual perspective of coming from that place of truly having navigated the system ourselves. As mentioned, my son is now 25, and his challenges started when he was in about grade 2 with a diagnosis of ADHD. And then it went from in elementary school navigating the system and getting help and support to the teen years, which were challenging with additional challenges that quite typically happen in the teen years when kids are feeling vulnerable in school and learning disabilities and then moving into substance use. So I navigated sort of the substance use system as well. And then into his early and late, well, late teens and early 20s. So I have had probably more experience than I would choose to have. Having said that, it's taught me a lot. So a typical day at the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center for me would be either answering phones, taking emails, or meeting people in person, meeting families or youth in person, to really start with where they're at and figure out what they're needing at that moment. It may be a new diagnosis, it may be the school has said my child has a challenge and I'm not sure where to go from there. It may be that we know there's a problem and things aren't going so well, we found the system, but now what? So. And again, my Force Society colleagues, which are located in over 15 different communities in British Columbia, also do the same thing, where we meet families where they're at and really help from a unique parent lens as well as an education lens. As far as, so the Force's mandate basically is to support and empower and educate families. And the system navigation piece is the piece that comes up all the time. It's there are barriers, there are challenges, and we all know that. And so a piece of that is really looking at brainstorming and collaboratively looking at solutions to the problems, which I have some frequently asked questions that I'll mention in a minute. So I think connecting with the Force Society is a really good place to start, whether you go to the GP first or also Child and Youth Mental Health, which had been mentioned that was all over the province. They have opened a new walk-in or open access, so families do not require referral to access Child and Youth Mental Health anymore. You can go to the Child and Youth Mental Health website or the Ministry of Children and Family Development website, and you will find more information about each community's open access days. This may sound very confusing, and that's why the Force and the Kelty are here. So if you go to the website and you can't find the information, I'd recommend calling the Kelty Center or connecting with the community. We're called Parents in Residence, so your community PIR would be a really great first step as well. I think the other piece might be around challenges and barriers. And some frequently asked questions that I have found come up very often is, okay, that's great, we actually now know where to go, but there's a wait list. So what do we do about the wait list? And what I would recommend and what I've learned is to truly connect with others that have been through this situation so you feel like you're not alone. As Connie, Dr. Coniglio mentioned, there's 84,000 children and youth out there with challenges, so you're really not alone, even though it feels like it. So connect with others, whether that's the Force or the Kelty, is a great first step in terms of where you can connect with others and learn as much as you can. and there's educational videos on the CalTE website and the FORCE website. So for me, learning as much as I could, and sometimes it was about mental health, and sometimes it was about communication tips for how to better connect with my child when he was having so many challenges that it creates a dynamic that is very hard to get out of. So communication strategies are often a great way to do things differently, not better or worse, just differently. And families often feel that if it's suggested that they take a parenting class or a communication class, that it's because they've done something wrong. And what I've learned is that it really isn't about what was wrong. It's about things may not be so great, so how can we, again, do things differently? Another frequently asked question that I have is, okay, so we're on a wait list and I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to do as a parent, and now my youth is saying, well, I've changed my mind. I'm not going. And a lot of the calls are about that. So again, connecting in with others, engaging your youth with tips and strategies around, for example, collaborative problem solving, which again is a webinar and a resource on the CalTE Mental Health website and the FORCE website. So trying to convince your disengaged youth is almost impossible. It is, so again, what tips and strategies can you use that the professionals use to engage youth? And these are skills that parents can use, and for me, it's taken me several years to get better at some of these skills, and it's always a work in progress. There's no doubt about that. And the last frequently asked question is around, so you're on a wait list, and so you're actually now in services, you've engaged your youth, things are going reasonably well, in that your youth wants to go, and then your youth says, but I'm not feeling a connection, or this service is not working well for me, even though I want to now go. So that's very common, and what I would recommend is really focusing on your youth's goals. So what do they want? It might be that they'd like to speak to someone different. Is that possible? That's a question that can be asked in what we called an integrated team meeting, where you can have the school counselor involved. You can ask Child and Youth Mental Health, can we arrange an integrated team meeting to focus on the youth's goals, and how do we create a better fit? And what solutions are out there, and what strengths can we work with? And so the integrated team meeting is quite important. I guess I've lost my train of thought there. Sorry about that. But again, working with your youth and really asking what is possible, and using all of the resources out there, and try and collaborate across systems. Sometimes we hear that teachers are doing one thing and Child and Youth Mental Health is doing another. And how does everybody collaborate and work together on a youth-focused, youth-led, strengths-based goal? So I hope that's summed up some of the tips and strategies, and that families are really not alone. It truly is an up and down roller coaster ride, and yet there are supports and services out there. So just keep trying.
Great. Thank you, Julie. So we've got some time now for questions for our speakers. So I'm just going to open it up to telehealth first. If anyone in Powell River or Kamloops has a question, you can just unmute yourselves and just go right ahead. So are there any questions? Hello. Hi.
Yeah. Hi, from Powell River. I have a question that it recently came up with a parent of a kindergarten child who is experiencing social anxiety and was told that they don't really look at it until the child is in grade one. And I want to ask the question to the first speaker, is how important is it for for early intervention to not look at it being less of a problem when a child is in kindergarten? Would you not see it as being the time to intervene?
Can I go ahead?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So as thanks for the question. As I was saying earlier, early intervention is very, very important. And there are things that can happen with children who are quite young. There's lots of great tools and resources now for little kids that have a cognitive behavior therapy focus related to social anxiety, because social anxiety is something that children express fairly early on in life. So I would suggest that in this instance, you might want to become familiar with some of those tools and resources. They're in the form of books and online tools and self-help tools that parents can actually start using with their kids really early on. So if you have questions about some of those tools and resources, it's probably good to call the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center, and they can kind of connect you with some of the resources that exist. In schools these days, they have something called the Friends Program, and it does target a slightly older age group than kindergarten, but there is an understanding now that kids express anxiety very early on, and things can happen pretty early to sort of help them develop coping strategies that we all need to manage our anxiety, and that's really largely a cognitive behavior therapy focus. Can happen with kids of all ages.
Yeah, and with this, you know, I think we're seeing more of a kind of a selective leadism.
Yes.
So the child is very vocal outside of that setting, but
yep.
Choosing not to speak. And I experienced that with my own daughter. But are you seeing more of that, and how seriously should it be taken if the child's not speaking?
Yeah, selective mutism is something that there's been more attention on in the last couple of years. And it definitely sits in the anxiety spectrum for sure. It is something that we see here at BC Children's Hospital, and we do get referrals from community service providers for kids who have selective mutism. And then, of course, the interventions would very much be related to some intensive CBT to support that child around whatever's happening. So, yes, we're seeing it more. I'm not sure it wasn't always there, but it's understood better now as selective mutism as a part of anxiety. And yes, I would say it's worth taking a look at for a child that's young.
And in the educational system, sorry for taking up so much of your time, but how important is it to have those kindergarten teachers made more aware of this? And it's not just a question of pushing for the academics, it's more of things escalating.
Yeah. I mean, that's a part of the work that we're trying to do at the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center with our educator training. So we do something called the Summer Institute for Teachers, where we place a lot of emphasis on understanding anxiety in different age groups and trying to talk with teachers about how important it is to recognize that and learn about some strategies that could even be used in the classroom to help young kids. So yeah, I mean, it is, as we said, a bit of a learning curve for teachers about understanding, having mental health literacy, and knowing what to do, for sure.
Well, I'll definitely share that. Thank you.
Okay.
And just to follow up on the Summer Institute that Connie mentioned, it's August 20th and 21st this year, and registration is open. So if there are people on the phone or educators on the phone that are interested, you can visit the Kelty website for more information about the Summer Institute as well. So I'm just wondering if there are folks that are on the phone that have questions for our speakers. And if you do, if you can just go ahead and introduce yourself and ask your question.
Hi, this is Tanya from Summerland.
Hi, go ahead.
Okay. Just with Dr. Connie Coniglio, you just talked about the incidence of mental health disorders. Where is it around self-harm? The feedback we're getting in our schools when we're asking kids to identify what their struggles are, and a lot of what we're getting back is self-harm.
Yeah. So that's a good point and a good question. I don't actually have any specific data on self-harming behavior here, but it is actually not an uncommon way that youth and increasingly younger kids cope with their feelings. It is connected to emotional self-regulation, and when youth don't feel very self-regulated around their emotions, often self-harm is something that they do to cope with how they're feeling. So usually, often there's anxiety, sometimes depression, and other things going on when that occurs. I've worked a lot with the older youth population where self-harm is extremely common, and it's even sort of considered normative that youth engage in self-harm, and they talk about self-harm to each other, and there's a real spectrum of self-harming behavior that is pretty normal in that population. It's not necessarily even secretive among the youth who engage in it, and it can take a lot of forms. It is something that's, again, been around, I think, a very, very long time. I think what's different about it is the secrecy has kind of gone away. It used to be a lot more of a secretive kind of behavior, but not so much now in terms of the youth population. But to me, it really is about how people manage how they feel, and we need to work on helping youth develop better, more positive coping strategies when they're feeling very emotionally unstable.
Yeah, and I just to keep adding on to what Connie's saying, we had a fantastic pinwheel in March about self-harm and healthy coping tools, and it's available on the Kelty website. And if you're looking to get some more information about self-harm and more specifically self-harm behaviors in youth, we had a youth speaker that was part of that pinwheel, and I would really suggest that you take a listen to that to learn a little bit more about that as well.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm also a psychiatric nurse, 23 years of psychiatry and mental health. Came into work as a public health nurse, more upstream thinking. Also aware of the Mind Up program, Dr. Stanley Kuchar and the Goldie Hawn as well. So just with Julie Collette, again, with the communication disconnect between the Ministry of Children and Families and the school Ministry of Health and the schools and child and youth mental health, and we are struggling as well here in the community around everything that you've identified as a stigma. So as public health nurses, we do have an opportunity to go into our schools and do some work. So that's where we can offer service.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you. Okay. Are there other questions on the phone? Are there questions in the room for our speakers?
Okay, so after you've gone through the whole system, and there's flaws in each level, then what do you do?
Julie?
Because I've recently gone through all of this. Things this past month.
Yeah.
And I'm at the point of, okay, now what do I do?
Well, that's a great question, and I've been there many times. And you go back to the drawing board in terms of what is the youth's goal? Is there any part of that, is there any bit that they want to work on? And it may not be what you think that they should be working on. It may be that they actually want to find a job and you think that they want to go back to school. So you work with really their goals, and that's your most likely in. Because sometimes it isn't about making sure they get to therapy, even though they should be in therapy, in our opinion. If they're not interested in it at that time, then you're not going to be able to get them there anyway. So really working with what they want, and then trying to find a service that meets that need as opposed to our agenda and our need. Sometimes that's really what you're left with. It may not be the answer that you're hoping for.
No, because really in the end it's just the family, which I've found.
And so the families, that's what I spend a large part of my day is supporting families and figuring out where they're at and what they need in order to accept and work towards slow change with their child or youth. So sometimes it's about helping the family cope with the youth's choices that are less desirable than what the parents have in mind. So there's no particular answer. It's really about readiness. And on the other hand, they are looking at doing a little bit of more assertive engagement with youth recently. So that's encouraging to me that that service providers are noticing that the engagement piece has to be a bit more than, oh, you don't feel like it. Okay, come back when you're ready. So asking...
Actually, that isn't the problem that I have found.
Oh, okay.
My problem was starting with the family doctor. The family doctor didn't really know how to navigate the mental health system herself.
Mm-hmm.
Especially child and youth mental health system.
Yeah.
She was very, and then the schools, they offer like a little bit of support and that they make it a bit easier for the child, but only if they can, that's at the principal level, but not necessarily at the teacher level.
Mm-hmm.
And then the community-based mental health system, which I went to recently, they said that the services that I'm looking for are not provided there. And then the emergency room, they went in and said, well, your kid's been through here a couple times already, what do you want us to do?
Mm-hmm.
And at the BC Children's Hospital, they refer out mm-hmm. to the community, and then the community refers back to the Children's Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've found through this mental health system.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with, like, the Four Society has been excellent. It's been my only source of information, and early identification of the issues as well, because none of these people have ever been able to recognize what are the issues with my children. They would never tell me there's something wrong with your kid. It was always me saying, there's something wrong with my child. And they're like, well, what do you think it is? I don't know. Here's the symptoms. My son has been diagnosed with everything and anything under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a constellation of symptoms, which different health providers have tagged their, you know, it's the whole, an elephant is a horse put together by committee. That's what his diagnosis is. And
it is frustrating. There are barriers, and I would suggest in this case.
And everything leads to go back, go find private health care.
Well, there's also that option, or it's going back to ask for an integrated team meeting where all the parties are in the room, and it's what is the goal and treatment plan
here. How do you do that?
You request it, and you,
so who, though,
you can.
Who goes to that though?
Child and youth mental health. You can ask for a team lead if you're speaking.
But through who?
Through child and youth mental health services.
They won't even let me in the door.
So I'm happy to speak with you after, and this is.
I think it'd be
unusual.
Really helpful for you and Julie
yeah.
to connect after, because
yeah.
I think we can be helpful to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By just sitting down together and have a discussion about like. Strategizing a little bit,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
which is what they do,
and that is what we do. And it's
and thank
yeah.
God I found your website only because I was like fiddling around, and then I just thought, wow, this seems like a good website. And
oh,
so thank God I watched some
that.
Of the videos because
yeah.
I was able to identify some of the things in my son,
mm-hmm.
and then I was able to push my doctor, who hates mental health issues, to do a referral to BC Children's Hospital.
Right.
Yeah. So there are gaps and there are hiccups or, you know, roller coaster ride sometimes within the system. Sometimes it's also understanding, and I think that's what the video that Meredith was talking about and Connie was talking about, understanding and having clear expectations about what service can do, so that, for example, the hospital wouldn't likely admit unless given a certain situation. So having clear expectations, which I can certainly help you with, helps a little bit with some of the frustration about knowing what you're going to get when you go where. And also, again, collaboratively working with the system, because all those people are there and have gone into this role because they actually do want to help. So it's how do we figure out a way together. And sometimes that's the trickiest piece of all of this. So I hope that helps. I'm happy to speak with you after.
Okay, thank you for that. Other questions on the phone or in the room? One other thing I just wanted to mention that I don't think has been mentioned yet, and especially when we're talking about early identification and early intervention, is mindcheck.ca, and I'm not sure how many folks on the phone or in the room know about it, but it's a youth and young adult focused website that has self-assessments and information and resources. So in terms of kind of like having symptoms and not really being sure what the mental health challenge might be, there are self-assessment tools that are on the website in addition to local, bless you, and provincial resources. So I just thought I would make sure that folks know about MindCheck as well.
MindCheck?
Mind check, so like mind, M-I-N-D, check.ca. And again, all of these resources are available on the Kelty website, and you can also always email the Kelty Center or call or drop in, actually. Three ways you can access the Kelty Center if you have more questions or need some more information and resources.
I have one more question. You mentioned earlier about an app. Are there any apps available at this time?
Go ahead.
Yeah, the app I was referring to is the Mind Shift app, which is an anxiety app for youth. We co-developed it with Anxiety BC, and it's available for free on the iPhone and Android devices. And we're also currently working on the development of a mindfulness app for youth as well.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, so if there aren't any further questions, I think we will call it. So thank you everyone for participating. Thanks again to our speakers for coming and speaking to all of us. And I hope everyone has a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.